Morning. Today's daf in Shabbos is your test. We are on your Chesam base. We're at the two dots, about 10 lines from the bottom of the Amud. We are beginning this morning with Beishamay Armim Ein Mocher. Go back to the Mishnah that we saw in Yizayin Amud base. We started this Mishnah yesterday's daf. And this Mishnah introduces us to a number of machloksim between Beishamay and Beisil. These are the unresolved machloksim. These are the machloksim that perpetuate. As one of the machloksim, there are five altogether in the Mishnah. And the first three were already discussed yesterday in detail. First three had to do with the activities where you started a malacha before Shabbos. The malacha continued through Shabbos, but you had no active participation of the malacha through the Shabbos. So are those activities mutter or asr? Machlokes between Beisham and Beisilo. Beisham says it's asr, Beisilo says it's mutter. There are a number of ways to say over the machlokes, but the Gemara concluded yesterday that the easiest way to say it and the most fundamental way to say it is that they're arguing over the concept of Shvisas Kalim. Do your Kalim have to observe the Shabbos? Bishamai says they do. Beisilo says they do not. And so Beisilo says that as long as you started the Malacha before Shabbos, even though your Kalim are going to be doing Malacha, and as we pointed out yesterday, according to Beisilo, it does not matter whether it was done passively or actively. Nevertheless, Beisilo totally allows the Kalim to do Malacha, perform Malacha on Shabbos. We discussed also yesterday a lot of halach lemaisa, because although your kelim can do malach on Shabbos, and that means that in theory you could put up a raw pot of food right before Shabbos and allow it to cook before Shabbos, but there is another consideration of shem yechate begachalim. That the understanding, of course, is that once food is going up for Shabbos and I plan on eating it on Shabbos, there is a temptation that I'm going to want to stoke the coals that are underneath. And as a result of that, so the Chachamim banned certain types of activities in terms of putting up a pot of food before Shabbos. Yesterday we discussed some of the details of that. Go back to yesterday's daf for a review of those halachas. We are now going to go into the Mishnah and continue in the Mishnah in discussing the fourth machlokas between Beisham and Beisilo. If you look back at the Mishnah, and I'm going to just reread this machlokas, it's on the very bottom of your Zayin Amud Beis. The Mishnah over there says, Beisham Ormim Ein Mochel Lanachri. One is not allowed to sell to a non-Jew. One is not allowed to help him carry, put it up on his donkey. Ein magbin alav. You can't help him load it up on himself. Ela kedesh yagil makom karov. Unless you know that he's going to be arriving at his destination before Shabbos. Beisilo Matir and Beisilo says it would be fine. It would be totally fine to load him up and let him go. And if you think about it, consider the fact that you sold it to him. So it's not your item anymore. The fact that he's going to be carrying it on Shabbos, says Beisilo, is of no concern to you. What is behind the sheet of Beishamai that he disallows this activity? And he only allows it when the person gets to his house before Shabbos? So you look back at the Rashi and the Mishnah. I read it quickly yesterday. I'll do the same thing today. V'lo magbin alav, Rashi writes, Masu aktefo, denira kimisayo laholech b'Shabbos. Because it looks like you're assisting him in terms of transporting on Shabbos. So it is some sort of Maris Ein, if you will. The appearance is that you're helping him transport it, and therefore it would be prohibited. That's the Rashi back in the Mishnah in explanation of the Shita of Beis Shammai. We now pick it up right in the Gemara on Yud Ches Amud Beis, where we left off yesterday. Tanu Rabbanan, we start with a Braisa. Beis Shammai Armim Loim Kor Adam Chefso Lanachri. According to Beis Shammai, a person is not allowed to sell his items to a non-Jew, v'lo yashil enu, and also not allowed to lend it to him, v'lo yilav enu, not allowed to lend it to him. What's the difference between she'ela and halva'a? So the basic difference is that she'ela, the expectation is I'm going to get in return the same item that I lent out. I lent out my rake. Halva'a is that the understanding is that I'm not going to get the exact same thing, but I'm going to get a replacement. Usually we describe that in terms of money. In either regard, according to Beis Shammai, one is not allowed to do that, v'lo yitein lo b'matana. And one is not allowed to give him a gift, ela kedesh yagil beiso. And the only way you're allowed to do this is only if it gets to his house prior to the Shabbos. Otherwise, you're not allowed to. This, of course, is consistent with the Shita of Beis Shammai that we saw back in the Mishnah. Ubeisil omrim kedesh yagil beiso samach lechoma. Now, Beisil is of the opinion that he doesn't have to reach all the way home. He just simply has to get to the first house that is interior to the wall of the city in which he lives in. Rabbi Kiva omrim kedesh yetzei mipesach beiso. And Rabbi Kiva says, no. The allowance is that you are allowed to give it to him as long as he exits your house before Shabbos. I'm Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda, hein hein devrei Rabbi Kiva, hein hein devrei beis hilo. Lo ba Rabbi Kiva, ela lefarish devrei beis hilo. And as far as the sheet of Rabbi Kiva, it is not a third sheet, says the Gemara, but rather it is an explanation of the sheet of beis hilo. A simple reading of beis hilo would indicate that it would only be allowed if the person, if the non-Jew in which you gave it to, will get to his city wall prior to Shabbos. But Rabbi Akiva explains, within the Shita of Beis Hillel, that's an imprecise definition. The precise definition actually is, as long as he's out of your house before Shabbos, so then you can make any transaction with him, you can give him something, lend him something, you can make any of the above transactions, provided that he leave your house prior to the Shabbos. That is the Shita of Beis Hillel. Tanur Rabbanan, we are continuing now in the bottom of the Amud. We are staying on the same idea, but moving topics. We are now talking about Chametz on Pesach. Obviously, with Chametz on Pesach, there are three Isurim by Chametz on Pesach. You are not allowed to eat it, get benefit from it, or own it. And the Gemara over here is discussing transferring the Chametz over to a non-Jew. Not exactly like what we do nowadays. Nowadays, we do make a mechira, but with the understanding, with the test and understanding that we're going to buy it back. Back in the day, when they would sell the chametz to the non-Jew, it was a final sale. And even within this, Beit Shammai has a really interesting position, which is that the only way you're allowed to sell the chametz to a non-Jew prior to Pesach is only if he is going to consume it only by the time Pesach rolls around. Ubeisil omrim kozman shemuta lo'ochlo muta lo'mochro. And Beit Shammai is of the opinion that as long as you're allowed to eat it, you're allowed to sell it. Meaning you don't have to gauge how long it's going to take the non-Jew to eat it. As long as you yourself can eat it, you have every right to sell it to a non-Jew. And despite the fact that he's going to be eating it through Pesach, that's no concern of yours. It doesn't belong to you. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kutach Abavli, V'chol Minei Kutach, Asalim Kor Lamed Yom, Korim Pesach. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that Kutach Abavli comes up again and again throughout Shas. It is the Babylonian dip. It's made up of a number of ingredients, soured milk, breadcrumbs, honey, other ingredients that I can't think of right now. Anyway, the Kutach HaBavli, so it has a lot of staying power. The milk was already soured, so it could stay around for a while. So the Kutach HaBavli and anything that is of the Mine Kutach, so you cannot sell to a non-Jew within 30 days prior to Pesach. Rav Yehuda is working within the Shita of Beit Shammai, and he's just simply extending this idea to the Kutach HaBavli. Interesting Rashi over here. This idea that you cannot sell to him within 30 days, why did he come up with the number 30 days? Rashi writes, Rashi is on the top of the Testament Aleph, and it is the second line down, the Dibra Maskel Shoshim Yom, and I'm reading the Rashi. Mishematchilin lidrosh behilchus haPesach, chala azharas Pesach alav. So from the time that we start darshaning, because we know that kodem lechag Shloshim Yom, that before Yontif, 30 days prior to Yontif, one has to start darshaning in the halachas of Yontif. This is true by Sukkot. It's true by Pesach. We recently saw a Rashi. Forgive me, I don't remember which daf. We recently saw a Rashi that says it also applies to Shavuos as well, which is quite frankly a little bit difficult because the halachas of Shavuos are just basically Yontif halachas. There are no halachas specific to the Yontif of Shavuos outside of the fact that it's a Yontif. Anyway, but Rashi says that because we're darshaning within 30 days, Rashi writes, the language of Rashi is striking. Chala azharas Pesach alav. So already the prohibitions of Pesach are upon you. Now, of course, Rashi does not mean that there's an Isser Chametz 30 days prior. But in other words, but you should be thinking about the Isser Chametz as you're within 30 days prior to Pesach. And so therefore, if you have your Kutach HaBavli and now you're going to be selling it to a non-Jew and you know that it has lasting power, so it cannot be sold within 30 days, you have to be selling it prior to the 30 days. Okay, really interesting Rashi, but let's just remind ourselves, all this is within Shitas Beit Shammai, meaning Shitas Beit Hillel, which obviously is the accepted position, is as long as you can eat it, you can sell it to the non-Jew, which is in fact the halacha. Continuing in the Gemara, when you test Amud Aleph, towards the top of the Amud, second line down, Tanu Rabbanan, Nos Nin Mizonos Lefnei HaKal B'Chatzer, you're allowed to feed a dog in your courtyard, and Nala V'Yatzo Ein Iskak En Lo. And even if the dog takes the food that you gave him and leaves the chaser, transferring the food from the chaser, which is the Rishus Yachid, and let's assume that he's going out into the street and bringing it to the Rishus Arabim, that's not your concern, ain't his kak and lo. Now, this idea of feeding the dog, so this is a very interesting idea, which we're going to see a number of times, and this being a very clear indication. We're going to learn in general that in terms of feeding animals on Shabbos, you can only feed animals on Shabbos that are reliant upon you for food. And this is a very straightforward, clear-cut halacha, with notable exception to dogs. Dogs, the Gemara assumes to be an animal that even if the dog is not under your ownership, Nevertheless, you have an obligation to feed the dogs. Now, why that should be? So one possibility is because the Gemara later on is going to talk about the fact that dogs are just simply impoverished animals. I'm not sure if I understand that fully, but the Gemara views dogs as animals that are just needy. And the other possibility, which I'm sure everyone here is thinking, is it was a reward for the dogs because as we were exiting Mitzrayim, so lo yechrat kelev es l'shono, no dog barked as we were leaving, and so as a schus, as a reward for the dogs, so therefore they're given a free meal from us every time we see a dog in need, even if it's not our dog. Okay, so just a really interesting idea regarding dogs, that regardless of whether the dog is owned by you or not owned by you, so you have an obligation to feed it even on Shabbos. That already is a given, meaning the Bryce assumes that we know that. What the Bryce is teaching us is, and don't worry if the dog takes the food and subsequently takes it outside the chatzer, that's not your concern. Similarly, says the Bryce, same thing is true with a non-Jew. Non-Jew comes into your chatzer, and you're going to share with him some of your food, that's totally fine. And the fact that he's going to take the food and now leave the chatzer, that's not your concern. In other words, he doesn't have Shabbos, he doesn't have Shmir Shabbos, and the fact that he's taking the food out of the chatzer, it's not your food anymore, the food now belongs to him, and that would be perfectly fine. Hasulamali, the Gemara says, Hainu Hach. Now the Gemara says, the second point of the Braisa seems to be a repetition of the first point of the Braisa, and therefore it seems to be somewhat superfluous. Mao Detema, the Gemara explains, not necessarily, because one could suggest, Hai Rami Aleha, Hai Lo Rami Aleha, Kamash Malan. We see when it comes to the dog, so the obligation to feed the dog is upon you. And again, this goes back to what I said at the beginning of the Braisa. The Gemara's assumption is that whenever you see a dog, you are required to feed that dog, even if the dog is not owned by you. And so therefore, when it comes to the dog, where there is a requirement to feed the dog, so one can make the simple argument that don't concern yourself. There's no need to concern ourselves that Chilul Shabbos is going to happen with the food, i.e. the dog is going to take it from the chatzer into the Rishus HaRabim. But when it comes to a Nachri, where you have no obligation to feed the Nachri, what you're doing is a chesed, but it's not an obligation. So one could have made the argument that don't feed the Nachri because subsequently then he's going to take the food and transfer it from the chaser into the Rishus HaRabim. That's the Havamina. And the Maskan, of course, is that does not have to be a concern of yours. Tan Rabbanan, continuing in the Gemara on Yotes Amud Aleph. Lo Yasker Adam Kelev LaNachri Be'erev Shabbos B'dal Vehei. One is not allowed to rent out their Kelim to a non-Jew, neither on Friday, nor on Thursday, or on Wednesday. On Wednesday and on Thursday would be mutter. One is not allowed to send a letter with a non-Jew on Erev Shabbos, meaning don't give him a letter to mail. B'dal v'hei mutter. And on Wednesday or Thursday, it would be fine. He never had a letter that was sent in the hands of a non-Jew, a chumrah that he took upon himself. Okay, so the Gemara says over here that one is not allowed to send a letter with a non-Jew on Friday. Why not? So interesting Rashi over here. Rashi writes, Rashi, Diver Hamascha lo yaskar adam kelav, fourth line down, Lasos ben melacha b'erev Shabbos, denira shemaskir lo letzorach Shabbos. So it looks like you're hiring him letzorach Shabbos for the purposes of Shabbos. Meaning, although the fact of the matter is that you're paying him to mail the letter, and in a moment we'll make a discussion regarding whether or not the price was fixed or the price was not fixed. Obviously, in our system of mail, the price is fixed in terms of how much it is to mail a letter, and the Gemara is going to make that distinction, and we're going to see it in just a moment. But just simple Pshat and Rashi over here is that because what you're doing is that you're giving him a letter to send, and you are paying him, it's nirem maskir lo letzorach Shabbos. It looks like you're hiring him to do an action for you on Shabbos. Now, it's not actually the case, meaning Rashi over here uses the word nirem. It appears this way. It's not actually the case because you're not insisting that the letter get there on Shabbos, and it goes without saying that if you're insisting that the letter get there on Shabbos, so that's amir la'akum. So that obviously would be forbidden. But you're not insisting the letter get there on Shabbos, but still, when you're handing him the letter on Friday, it gives off that impression. And so therefore, midrabanan, again, like a marasayin issue, so therefore that activity is going to be prohibited. On Wednesday or Thursday, there's enough of a buffer between Wednesday and Thursday and that of Shabbos, so you don't have that impression. That's a simple pshat of the Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan, continuing in the Gemara, as we're going to dive deeper into this discussion of mailing. Tanu Rabbanan, Meshach and Igaris Biad Nachri of Shabbos, Elam King, Kotzetz Lo Damim. One is not allowed to send a letter with a non-Jew on Erev Shabbos unless the price is fixed. Meaning once the price is fixed and you know exactly how much it's going to cost to mail this letter or package or whatever it is that you're mailing, so then it would be okay to give it to him even on a Friday. And again, this debate between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, which we already saw in the beginning of today's daf, as to at what point does he, the non-Jew, have to arrive at when he is in fact delivering the letter before Shabbos. Beis Shammai says he has to get all the way to his house, and Beis Hillel says until he gets to the interior of the wall of the city in which he lives in. Now the Gemara says, now I'm awfully confused, because we just said that if there was Kitzitzas Damim, if we know how much it is, so then the Gemara says that it should be Mutter, Lechatchila. And what just happened over here? And the Gemara asks exactly that question. V'alo Katsatz, and didn't you set the terms of how much it's going to be to mail the letter? I'm Rav Sheshes, Hachikama. Rav Sheshes says, no, this is how you understand the Braisa. Im lo Katsatz. The second part of the Braisa now is shifting in topic to where you didn't decide how much it's going to be. Now, once we didn't decide how much it's going to be, and so now I'm not paying him for the job, but I'm going to pay for him based on whatever we decide. So then, we're going to have the debate between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, and that is, how far does he have to arrive, he, the mailman, have to arrive with the letter prior to Shabbos? Now the Gemara says, still, the confusion is not fully alleviated. Because look at the beginning of the Braisa. The beginning of the Braisa starts off very emphatically and very definitively saying, Ein mashlichin igeres b'yad nachri erev Shabbos. That one is not allowed to do so, unless you fix the price. But if you didn't fix the price, it sounds like it would be patently prohibited, period. So lokasha had kfiya beidor b'masa had lo kfiya beidor b'masa. So the Gemara makes a distinction in terms of whether there is a beidor in the city. Presumably we're talking about the destination which the letter is arriving at, or there is no beidor. Now, beidor in modern Hebrew is a reference to the post office, but over here beidor probably does not mean that. Before we dive into what the beidor actually means, so basically we're saying like this. If the price is fixed in terms of this is going to be the standard price of the sending of a letter, so then under those circumstances, we do not have a debate between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, and there is a full allowance to send it with the non-Jew on Shabbos. Again, provided that you don't demand that the letter get there on Shabbos. Once you do that, so then we get on to the topic of Amir La'akum, and that obviously is going to be prohibited. But if you did not determine how much it is going to cost in order to mail the letter, and that is going to be, and that detail is going to be hammered out after he has taken the letter and agreed to send it, so then a distinction is to be made in terms of at what point must this non-Jewish mailman arrive at in order for this activity to be mutter. And the Gemara over here makes a distinction between whether there's a beidor or whether there is no beidor. If there is a beidor, so then there is an allowance that's given by Beis Hillel. And if there is no beidor, so then there is no allowance that's given. Okay, so basically to organize, if the price is fixed, mutter legamrei, for Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. If the price is not fixed, it depends whether there's a beidor or there's not a beidor. If there is a beidor, so then it would be allowed provided that the non-Jewish mailman gets to the beidor before Shabbos. Otherwise, it would be usur. Okay, now it's fair to ask at this point in time, what is a beidor? So Rashi over here has the word dor shelt on a ear. Rashi describes it as being basically the leader of the city. Velo regilin l'shloach igeres. And it's to him where the letters typically go. Now, what Rashi could possibly mean, not totally clear, and if you see the Ritva over here on this Rashi, you certainly get the sense that this is what Rashi means. What Rashi means over here is that the mailman knows exactly where the letter is going to be sent to. So when the mailman knows exactly where the letter is going to be sent to, so now he knows exactly where to go with this letter, and now as he gets into the city and he gets to his destination, he will get there prior to Shabbos because he knows exactly where he's going. That seems to be the pshat of Rashi. That certainly is a way to read Rashi. And then you understand that when the price is fixed, so then it's totally mutter legamrei, because again, that's contract work. which he is doing now, and because it's contract work, he's doing it for himself. Masha'en Kane, if the price is not fixed, so basically now you are hiring him for a job, you're paying him for let's say for the hour, for the amount of time that he works, and if he's getting there on Shabbos itself, so it's nearer, so now it's the impression that you're hiring him to work for you on Shabbos, which obviously you're not allowed to do. And then if he knows exactly where he's going and he can get there before Shabbos, so then it would be mutter. That's the basic outline of the Gemara. Admittedly, we did the Gemara in short order. You can obviously go much deeper into the Gemara, but that is a simple reading of the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, we continue in the Gemara in Mafligim Besfina Pachus Migimel Yomim Kodem LeShabbos. Going on a cruise. I know none of us want to think about going on a cruise for a considerably long time, but if you go on a cruise, so the Brisa says that one cannot go on the cruise unless he starts off 3 days before Shabbos. And that way he's on the cruise for a minimum of 3 days before Shabbos. Bamedvar Mamorim, now this is only true, Lidvar Rishus. That's only if it is a cruise of leisure. Avalizvar Mitzvah, but if there's a mitzvah in terms of why he's going on the boat, so then Shapidami. So then it would be okay for him to get on the boat within 3 days prior to Shabbos. Okay. I'll just continue reading the Gemara. Obviously, we need to understand this a little bit better. We're going to, but let's just finish reading the Braisa. Now, the fact that you're going to be traveling over the course of Shabbos. Now, there is tchum issues, but there really is no tchum issues because tchum doesn't apply out in the sea. An idea which we're going to talk about more when we get to Masechta Erevin. So there really isn't a tchum issue. As you port, by the way, there is going to be a tchum issue, but again, we don't have to worry about that right now. And in terms of the fact that now he's going to be navigating on Shabbos and you're going to be benefiting from that navigation on Shabbos, so there is a debate amongst the Tanaim exactly what you should do. So according to Rabbi, what you should do is that posting him, I'm not slishpos. You say to the captain, do me a favor, please try to rest on Shabbos, meaning don't work on Shabbos, with the understanding that he's going to work on Shabbos. But as long as you ask him not to, so according to Rabbi, that would be sufficient. And Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer Einu Sarech, and Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no, there's no even need for that. Meaning, there's a tacit understanding that the cruise is going to go, the ship is going to go more than 3 days, the captain is going to be navigating over Shabbos, and that would be fine. Umitzur l'Sidon afil be'erev Shabbos mutter. Now, if it happens to be that this boat is venturing from Tzur to Sidon, so then you can go on erev Shabbos because it's a one-day journey, and so therefore you will get to your destination even within that day. Okay. Now, the obvious question, which we all are wondering, is the Brisa says that if it's a leisure boat trip, one cannot start off his venture within 3 days of Shabbos. And the Gemara does not give a single explanation as to why that should be the case. And so, you are, without the Gemara giving an explanation, it demands an explanation. So the Rishonim give an explanation. Interesting over here, Rashi provides no explanation. Rashi just simply explains aspects of the Gemara, but Rashi does not explain why it is that it would be prohibited within 3 days. Okay. Tosos over here writes, Ein mafliga misfina, afilu tocha tchum, asa mishum shat. So Tosos over here says, it's a gzera because you may end up coming to swim. Now, it's unclear even within the sheet of Tosfos, why should that be within 3 days as opposed to beyond 3 days? Maybe because beyond 3 days, I'm guessing right now, I'm only thinking out loud. Maybe beyond 3 days, you're going to be so offshore that you're not going to be interested in swimming at that point in time. Perhaps that's a pshat within Tosfos. Honestly, I'm not sure. But that's Tosfos. The Rabbeinu Chananel says that it has to do with a tchum issue, that within 3 days there is going to be a tchum issue because you are close to port, but after 3 days there's no longer going to be a tchum issue. The riff over here, really interesting riff. The riff writes over here on the dapim, on the dapim riff, the reason why one cannot go start off his cruise within 3 days of Shabbos is because it takes 3 days to acclimate to the boat. The first 3 days of a cruise are the worst. I'm not speaking from experience over here. I've never gone on a cruise. And as everyone here can imagine, not going to start anytime soon. But it takes 3 days to acclimate to the cruise. And that means that if you start your cruise out on Friday or Thursday, or seemingly even Wednesday as well, so what's going to happen is that you're going to be seasick. And you're going to be seasick over Shabbos. And the Rif writes, that's exactly what the concern was of the Chachamim. The Chachamim do not want people to be in a state of discomfort over Shabbos. Meaning, put yourself in a position where you're going to be comfortable over Shabbos. And so the Rif writes, that's why the Gzeirah de Rabbanan, that one cannot do so. Now, by the way, within the Rif, now it makes sense, the distinction of, that's only Dvar Rishus, if it's a Dvar Mitzvah. So over here, what's the concern? The concern is discomfort over Shabbos. But if there's a Mitzvah that is mitigating, that's pushing you to go on this cruise, so then obviously you'll go. The Baal Ma'or has an interesting sheet as well, but for now, I gave up a lot of information, and on another occasion, you can take a look at the Baal Ma'or, it's right by the Daf Arif. He offers another explanation in terms of why it should be. In the meantime, however, continuing in the Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan, Ein Tzarin Al Ayar Shal Nachum Pachas Migam Yom Kodem Shabbos. One should not start a siege within 3 days of Shabbos. Sieges are usually not a short event. And if you start the siege within 3 days of Shabbos, so then the probability is that the siege is going to continue through Shabbos. And the Gemara over here is not giving us any details. Are we talking about a Mechemes Mitzvah? Are we talking about a Mechemes Rishus? So it is not clear. One could make the argument that if it's a Mechemes Mitzvah, then it goes without saying that one could start it. But I don't have clarity on this issue. Anyway, the Imis Chilo Im Afsikin. However, if you start the siege within 3 days of Shabbos, and the siege is going to continue through Shabbos, so be it. In other words, if the need demands that we have to start before Shabbos, so then we do so. When you start a campaign, so the Torah says, Ad Ridata, you have to continue, and you have to finish the campaign. And you can't stop in the middle, and despite the fact that now there obviously will be a violation of Shabbos, but once a campaign has begun, so then it must finish. And again, I open the question without knowing, is it talking about a Mechemes Mitzvah? Is it talking about a Mechemes Rishus? It's really unclear. Continuing in the Gemara. Amar Shimon Gamliel, Noagin Hayu. Tanya, the Gemara quotes a Braisa. Now remember in the Mishnah, the Mishnah brought in the Chumrah of Rabbi Gamliel. You go back to yesterday's Daf, and you go back to the top of Yud Chesaman Aleph, and that was still a continuation of the Mishnah. And in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that it was a practice of Beis Abba where they would only give white garments to the Kovitz 3 days before Shabbos, meaning he was machmir, like the Shita of Beit Shammai. Tanya, we are continuing now in the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Tzadok Kachaya Menagos Shabbos Rabbi Gamliel. This was the practice of Rabbi Gamliel. Shayu Nohagen Kli Lavan LeKovitz Gemal Yamin Kodem LeShabbos. So when it comes to the white garments, so that was given to the launderers 3 days before Shabbos, because laundering whites was a more thorough process and a more time-consuming process. Utzevuyim, but when it comes to colored clothing, I feel be'er Shabbos, you can even give it to them on Erev Shabbos because they finish the cleaning of colored clothing for reasons that I do not understand, just take a much shorter period of time. I guess the whitening process is a longer process, whatever the case is. So, and mind you, by the way, all this was a chumrah because they were adopting the shita of Beit Shammai, meaning according to Beis Hillel, you could drop off both at the launder right before Shabbos. Again, with the proviso, I'll say it again, it's very important that you don't demand that he finish it by the end of Shabbos. Once you do that, so then we're on Amir La'akum. We just simply mean that if he decides to clean it on Shabbos and you didn't give him instruction to do so, so that would be fine because, again, we follow like Beis Hillel, there is no Isser of Shvisas Kalim. Umi Divrayim, continuing in the Gemara, Lamanu Shalavadim Kashim Lechavsam Yosim Netzvun. Now, just as an aside, meaning aside from the Halacha, we just learned together that it takes longer for the launderer to clean whites than it is to clean colors. Abai would give his clothing over to the launderer. Question was very simple. How much does it cost to launder the clothing? It was clothing of color. So the launderer says, oh, it's the same price for colors as it is for whites. So Abai says to the launderer, I'm not accepting that. Kfar kadumach rabbanan. I know my Mishnayos. I know the Braisos. The Braisa tells us it's a cleaning whites is a 3 day process. Cleaning colors is a 1 day process. You can't be charging me the same fee for a process that takes a third of the time that it does to clean whites. So basically, Abai called out the launderer. You cannot be right. Amar Abai Hamandi I Manel Katsra Bimishcha Nesiv Leiv Bimishcha Nishka Minay. So Abai gives more laundromat advice when giving your clothing to the launderer. So you should put it on before, you should put it on afterwards. Make sure that the launderer didn't either stretch it or shrink it. And the Gemara makes exactly that point, is that if it's too long, so that means that the launderer stretched it, and if it's too short, that means that the launderer shrunk it. And so therefore you try it on before and after, and that way you'll know that if there's anything that happened, it's a result of the negligence of the launder. V'shamin elu ve'elu she'to'anin. Now we go back to the Mishnah. Now I was remiss at the end of yesterday's shiur in which I didn't explain the Mishnah. I read the end of the Mishnah, but I didn't explain it. And I said I would explain in the beginning of shiur today. However, I recognize the fact that the Gemara is going to be spending time with it, a good amount of time with it, so we could just follow the Gemara over here for an explanation. First, let's review. You look at the end of the Mishnah that we saw in yesterday's daf on the very top of Yud Ches Amud Aleph, and the Mishnah talks about Vishavin. Where does Vishavin and Beis Hillel agree? Vishavin Elu Ve'elu Shetonin Koros Beis Abad V'Igule Hagas. That what one can do right before Shabbos is put on the heavy beams over the grapes that you're currently pressing, or over the olives that you're currently pressing, and any of the juice that comes out subsequently would be mutter, and you could do this activity even though it's right before Shabbos. Now for Beis Hillel, that's a no-brainer. Beis Hillel allows any of these activities to be done right before Shabbos. But for Beis Shammai, obviously this represents a chiddush, and the Mishnah does not give an explanation as to why. Why should it be that one would be allowed to put the beams on and squeeze out the juice from the grapes and the olives right before Shabbos? Seemingly this would be a violation of Shvisas Kalim. And why would it be okay according to Beis Shammai? So that is the open-ended question. But the Gemara is going to answer that question. And first the Gemara is going to ask it. Mishna, we are in the bottom of Yud Tes Amud Aleph at the two dots. So Mishna Kulu de Gazru Beis Shammai, Mishna Koros Beis Abad, Vigul Gazru Lo Gazru. So the question is pretty straightforward. Up until now, Beis Shammai was saying Zera, 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 and now he's totally fine with it. So Hanach the Avet Lu B'Shabbos Mechayv Chata Gazru Beis Shammai, Erev Shabbos Im Chashecha. For all the aforementioned activities that were mentioned in the Mishnah, so we're talking about Isurei Da'araisa, meaning they are bona fide malachas. The activities of the Lisha, that's the first case of the Mishnah. The activity of the whitening of the Pishtan, which is Libun, which is also a Malacha Da'araisa. The activity of trapping, which is also a Malacha Da'araisa. So if I were to do any of those activities on Shabbos, it's going to be a malacha, a bona fide malacha. So therefore, Beis Shammai made gzera not to do it right before Shabbos. However, Koros Beis Abad v'Igulei Gas Yidavilu b'Shabbos Omechayev Chatos Lo Gazru. But over here, when it comes to the Koros Beis Abad, and when it comes to the Igulei Hagas, these activities do not represent malacha d'araisa. And so therefore, we are makel, and we allow you to do these activities right before Shabbos, because even if done on Shabbos, it's not a malacha d'araisa. Now, although the explanation is wonderful, that demands a further follow-up. Why are these activities not malachas d'araisa? So, man tana d'chomidi d'asim imela shapidami. So the Gemara says that we have to look and find the author of this position, that the liquid is coming out may aleim on their own. As long as the process started before Shabbos, this is not a malacha d'araisa, and one would in fact be allowed to benefit from the liquid that comes out. Who subscribes to this viewpoint? So I'm Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Shmalhi. So we're going to have basically a couple of Amorayim pointing to different Tanayim who subscribe to this viewpoint. So first we start off with the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, who quotes Rabbi Shmal, who says the following. Didnan, Hashem v'abos v'amalilo sh'raska mi ba'od yom. As long as you crushed it up from miba'od yom, from before Shabbos, Rabbi Shmal Omer yigmor mishetachshach. The process can continue even after Shabbos, meaning even during Shabbos. Meaning to say is as follows: since you crushed it up before Shabbos, and you put some sort of heavy stone on top of it, and the juice now is oozing out. So because it was crushed before Shabbos, and the oozing of the juice is just simply a byproduct of you having already crushed it up. So therefore, any subsequent juice that comes out, that flows out of it, would in fact be mutter, even if the flowing comes out on Shabbos. Rabbi Kiva Omer, and now Rabbi Kiva happens to be of the opinion of Lo Yigmor. No, you cannot finish the process, meaning you cannot benefit from the process being finished on Shabbos. So that is a Tana, meaning not Rabbi Kiva, obviously, but Rabbi Shmuel. So that is a Tana that's of the opinion that once you started crushing it on Friday and the process continues through Shabbos, so one would, in fact, allow to benefit from that on Shabbos itself. And Rabbi Eleazar, Amar Rabbi Eleazar, he. Now Rabbi Eleazar says that it's the Shita of Rabbi Eleazar. Now, of course, that sentence is confusing, but obviously what's meant over here is that Rabbi Elazar, the Amora, says that it's Rabbi Elazar, the Tana. There are two different people who happen to share the same name. Did not hear a Mishnah, Chalos Vashavitzkan Rerev Shabbos, that if I have honeycombs and you broke it up before Shabbos, so that now the honey is oozing out of the honeycombs, as Shabbos now already has begun, V'yatsume Atzman, but that oozing occurred naturally, as a result of the fact that I broke it, but I broke it up before Shabbos, Aser. So according to the Tanakham, it's Aser, and Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Elazar Matir, and Rabbi Elazar says that it's Mutter. So what we find over here is another Tana who subscribes to basically this viewpoint that as long as you break it up before Shabbos, any subsequent oozing, any subsequent juice that comes out is going to be Mutter. And so what we have over here is an assortment of Amorayim, two Amorayim quoting two different Tanayim. Now the Gemara over here wants to pinpoint why exactly each Amora chose their particular Tana, because what it certainly sounds like is that both of these Tanayim, Rabbi Shmuel of the first Brisa and Rabbi Elazar of the second Brisa, are basically making the same point. And what exactly is the subtlety that one Amora chose one Brisa and one Amora chose the other Brisa? And that's what the Gemara wants to try to clarify. So why didn't Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina follow the other Amor Rabbi Elazar, in that Rabbi Elazar chose Rabbi Elazar the Tana? When it comes to the honeycomb, so in terms of the status of the honey that comes out of the honeycomb, so it is originally food, and it follows then that the status continues to be food. Now the Gemara uses the word ochel over here. The Gemara's precision over here of using the word ochel is not a distinction between liquid versus solid, because obviously the honey that's oozing out is more liquid in nature than it is solid. It just simply means that once you break up the honeycomb, the honey that starts oozing out already has the status of ochel and continues to have that same status. Hacha, but over here, meikara ochel v'hashtamashka. But over here, in the case of in the first brisa, when describing the boser and the melilos, so there it was boser, of course, being a grape, and then you squeeze it and the juice is coming out, so that is a change in status. It goes from being an ochel, and then it becomes a mashke. So mikara ochel v'sof ochel, hacha mikara ochel v'ashta mashke. So Rebbe Lazar, amlecha, now Rebbe Lazar will say in his defense, hashamina leila Rebbe Lazar, da'afilu zeisim v'anavim namisharu. So, what do you mean? We know that according to Rebbe Lazar, the Tana, even Zesim and Anavim would be permitted. Because we have the following Brisa, and the Brisa tells us, Zesim v'Anavim shariska merev Shabbos, v'yatzumei atzman asur, Rebbe Lazar, Rebbe Shimon matirin. So here in the Brisa, it is the same Rebbe Lazar, the Tana, that we saw previously. But what we gain from this brisa is that the brisa says beferush zaysim va'anavim. So we know that the extension of the sheet of Rebbe Elazar is not just by honeycomb, but even by zaysim va'anavim as well. And so therefore, Rebbe Elazar the Amora is comfortable pointing to Rebbe Elazar the Tana, because although in the first brisa it didn't say beferush zaysim va'anavim, but in the second brisa it did. And so we have a clear brisa. And the Gemara says, Rabbi Yos, Rabbi Chinna, and Brisa lo Shmielei. Now, Rabbi Yos, Rabbi Chinna happens not to be familiar with that Brisa, and we've gone over this point numerous times. It is acceptable for an Amora not to be familiar with a particular Brisa. And Rabbi Yos just simply didn't know about that Brisa. Rabbi Lazar, my time, Amar, Rabbi Yos, Rabbi Chanina. Now, why didn't Rabbi Lazar point to the first Brisa that had Rabbi Yishmael? Why was he insistent on his Brisa with the Tana Rabbi Lazar? So the Gemara says, well, there are various stages and processes that are involved in the crushing of the grapes and the olives in order to make it into juice. And if you take a look at Rashi over here, the b'mechusar andicha kulem lo pligi, the asire de te'inasam hi gomeres v'nimsa kol asui b'shabes. If it's missing dicha is basically the crushing of the olives. So that means to say now that the olives did not go through the crushing process. So then there is no debate that such an activity would be prohibited, because basically the entire juicing of the olive is occurred now on Shabbos, and that would be a prohibited activity. If, however, dicha already occurred, you crushed up the olives, but you didn't go to the next step. The next step is the Gemara is about to mention is Shechika. Shechika, Rashi writes over here, Yoser Midicha, Lashon Odach Memeducha. So the Shechika is even a further pulverizing stage. And so therefore, if the Dicha was done, but not the Shechika, but at least the process already began before Shabbos. And let's just go back to the Gemara. Let's read this inside the Gemara. So, Lav Itmar La, Amar Rabba Berachinina, Amar Rav Yochanan, Memuchusar Dicha, if Dicha was not done to the olives. And so therefore, the pressing of the olives was basically a full olive. And so that the entire juice now is extracting, getting extracted over Shabbos. Kulam lo pligi. Ki pligi b'mechusar and shechika. V'hachina v'hanina mikimechusar and dicha damu. And over here, in our discussion, it is more analogous to mechusar and dicha. And that's why he chose his brisa with Rebbe Lazar as opposed to the previous brisa of Rebbe Yishmael. And then the Gemara just adds a note at the end of this discussion that the halacha falls like Rabbi Shmuel, which means to say that one would be allowed to start the squeezing process before Shabbos, and the subsequent juice that comes out on Shabbos, because the first press was done, the first of the press was done before Shabbos, so therefore the subsequent juice that flows out over the course of Shabbos is not going to be aser. Shemin Shabbadin Machatzal Shabbadin Rav Asar Rav Ushmol Sharei. The Gemara now goes off on a short and small tangent regarding the, since we were talking about the olive press, so we are now going to be talking about any of the residual olive, and we're also going to be talking about the mats themselves. So Shemin Shabbadin Machatzal Shabbadin. So the Shemin Shabbadin is basically residual oil. And the Machatzal Shabbadin, we're talking about the mats. Rav Asar Shmuel Shari, so here we have a machloks between Rav and Shmuel, whether you're allowed to move them on Shabbos. The question over here is that of Muksa. Look at Rashi over here, Rav Asar Letutule. Rav is, it says it's prohibited to move them, Mishum Muksa. Rav Savaka Rav Yehuda ben Muksa, Shmuel Savaka Rav Yishimon Delesle Muksa, Vahachi Amrinam ben Misha Hirshech. And over here, Rashi tells us that the machloks between Rav and Shmuel is really a machlokes Tanayim between Rav Yehuda and Rav Yishimon. And when we learn Beitza, and truth of the matter is we're going to see this at the end of our Masechta as well, we're going to see this idea repeated again and again, that Rabbi Shimon does not hold of Muksa, Rabbi Yehuda holds of Muksa. Not to be understood literally, it just simply means that Rabbi Yehuda has a broader application of Muksa, and Rabbi Shimon has a much narrower application of Muksa. And so therefore, these mats and the residual oil that's left in the olive press itself, according to Shmuel, are not going to be Muksa because he subscribes to Rav Yehuda, whose application of Muksa is very limited. Hani Karchi Dezuzei, the Gemara continues and talks about mats that are used to cover the cargo on a boat. And again, it's a Muksa question. Rav Asar Shmuel Shari, it's the same machlokes between Rav and Shmuel, again, hearkening back to the machlokes between Rav Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Amar Rav Nachman, Eiz Lechelva V'Rachel Gizasa, V'Tarnegolos Lebeitzasa, V'Turei D'Radya, V'Tamrei D'Iska. So once again, now we have various articles that were dedicated for its usage. And I'm just going to quickly run through each of the items that we just described. A goat for milking, a sheep for shearing, a hen for laying eggs, an ox that was used for plowing, and dates that are going to be used for business, meaning for sale. So Rav Asar Shmuel Mutter. So Rav is of the opinion that they're all Asar, meaning because they are designated for particular activities, they cannot be used on, now I'll say over here, Yontif. Because over here on Shabbos, what are you going to be using the animal for? Nothing. So let's assume over here that he's talking about Yontif. And the question now becomes, can you shecht it on Yontif? So once again, this comes out to the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rav subscribes like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon subscribes like Rabbi Shimon. I'm sorry. Shmuel subscribes like Rabbi Shimon. And again, it's the same machlokes in terms of the broad status of Muksa. The Kamithlagi Bapukta to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, and the Gemara spells this point exactly out. And just finishing up the daf, Hahu Tamide de Ori Becharta de Argis to Rabbi Shimon. There were students that lived in a particular place, and Argiz is his name, and he paskin like Rabbi Shimon. For a little bit more details on Argiz, see a Rashi over here. A really interesting Rashi in terms of who Argiz was. And anyway, you can see Rashi. But he passed like Rabbi Shimon. And Shamte Rav Amnuna. So the Gemara says, now Rav Amnuna put him in Cherem for passing like Rabbi Shimon. Now that's very unusual because we just saw that A, Rabbi Shimon is a Tana. And it's certainly to be put in Chayim to Paskin like Rabbi Shimon is strange. And furthermore, we also just saw together that Shmuel Paskin like Rabbi Shimon. So why did this person who Paskin like Rabbi Shimon be put in Chayim? V'haka Rabbi Shimon Svirle, the Gemara asks exactly that question. V'asrei derav hava lo ibayle lemavet ha'achig. So the Gemara says, location. It happens to be that this particular person, Paskin like Rabbi Shimon, in the community of Rav, and to Paskin like some other, to Paskin against the Marda Asra, Rav, who everybody knew, Paskin like Rav Yehuda by Moksa, and to Paskin against the Marda Asra, so for that, that is a bizayon of your Rav, and so for that, he was put in Chirim. Hani Trei Tamidei, Chad Matzel, Bechad Mane, Vechad Matzel, Ba'arba Vechamesh Mane. And then the Gemara says, now this really is totally irrelevant to our discussion over here. But the Gemara brings it in over here, just as an aside. It's somewhat related to our discussion over here. But anyway, the question over here, and we're going to see this later in the Masechta, in terms of, let's say there's a fire that breaks out, you're not allowed to put out the fire on Shabbos, but you are allowed to save food. How much food you're allowed to save is subject to a machlokas. So you had various students, one saved one portion, another saved 4 to 5, and the Kamifagi Bepukta, the Rabba Barzavda, Rav Huna, and what they're doing is going according to the various shitas that we're going to be seeing later in the Masechta. This is much later on, 100 blot from now, on Daf Kuf Chaf, where the Gemara is going to be discussing this machlokas in detail. The Gemara brought it up over here, not really sure why, somewhat connected, but the connection is loose. Let's quickly review the Daf today. We started off today going over the machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. When you make a transaction with a non-Jew, selling him something, so how far must he get in order for the transaction to be valid, meaning that the transaction occurred right before Shabbos? So according to Beis Shammai, he must get to his residence prior to Shabbos. Otherwise, it looks like you are assisting him in making that transport on Shabbos. It's nira. And Beis Hillel says that it would be mutter until what point in time? So in the Mishnah, it said the shita of Beis Hillel was as long as it is makom karov, right? I'm sorry. Beis Hillel in the Mishnah says it's mutter lagamrei. And then what we saw this morning, the first thing we saw this morning is a clarification, the shita of Beis Hillel, and that is as long as he leaves your house before Shabbos. He bought it, he left your house before Shabbos, that would be fine. The other issues that we tackled over the course of today's daf, we talked about the sale of chametz to a non-Jew prior to Pesach. Does it have to be so that the non-Jew can complete eating the chametz before Pesach? Or as long as you're allowed to eat it, you're allowed to sell it. Machlokes between Beisham and Beis Hillel. Obviously, we pass on like Beis Hillel. Feeding animals and sharing your food with a non-Jew, even though they're going to take the food out of your chatzer. So we learned together that was fine. The renting of your kalim to a non-Jew. So you're allowed to do it on Wednesday, you're allowed to do it on Thursday, but on Friday, it looks like you are, it's too close to Shabbos and it's nira. It looks as though you are renting it out and you are assisting with him on Shabbos. The sending of mail, a big topic in today's discussion. Friday would be prohibited, Thursday and Wednesday would be fine, but that's only if the price was not fixed. If the price was fixed, then it would be mutter. We discussed going on a cruise. One has to start the cruise well before Shabbos. One has to start the cruise on 3 days, more than 3 days before Shabbos. The Gemara doesn't give an explanation why. The Rishonim gave numerous explanations. And we shared this morning together a number of the explanations of the Rishonim. Starting a siege. You should not start the siege prior to Shabbos, but once you do, obviously you have to finish the siege, even if it means that you're going to be sieging over the course of Shabbos. We went back to the Mishnah. We talked about the difference between laundering white clothing and color clothing. White clothing is a longer process, 3-day process. Color clothing can be done within 1 day. And then we spent the rest of our daf today going over the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel regarding the fact that they agree that if I were to take a beam and put it over the olives and over the grapes, so that the juice now continues to squeeze out over the course of Shabbos. So they both agree that can be done immediately prior to Shabbos. And that subscribes to whose viewpoint? So that was where we spent a lot of time in today's daf. Various Amoraim pointed to various Tanaim who subscribe to this viewpoint. The reason why Beis Shammai would say that it's okay is because based on the position of various Tanaim, notably Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Elazar, so once the olives and grapes already were partially crushed prior to Shabbos, and the beam now is just simply continuing the extraction process. So therefore, that process does not involve a malacha d'areisa of schita of dash, and so therefore it would be mutter. And so that's why Beishamai allows you to put the beam on immediately prior to Shabbos. It does not violate an Isser d'Oraisa, since already the olives and the grapes are already crushed up to a certain degree. And then a couple of end notes on today's daf. We talked a little bit about Muksa, the machlokus between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, machlokus Amaraim, who do we subscribe to? That is the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, or that is the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda? Adkan. We'll continue tomorrow with the Mishnah.